Welcome back, everybody. We're in the middle of the transportation agenda. Are there any other questions on the remainder of the transportation agenda?
Governor, if I may, before you move forward, Mr. Slater needs to make a clarification on an earlier question.
Just real quick, at one point, Madam Treasurer asked me about toll rate, and I referred to it from I-66, but it was actually I-395 and not I-66, if I'm mistaken.
The $60.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions on the remainder of the
move approval?
I just want to make sure on the port administration on 5C, the dredge material containment facility. Just the question is how, I know you do, but can you tell us how you work in estimations of climate change and water and sea level rise?
Absolutely. Thank you for that question, Madam Treasurer, and good afternoon. Kristen Fidler with the MDOT Maryland Port Administration. Yes, MPA conducted a climate change vulnerability assessment for the Cox Creek Dredge Material Containment Facility out through the year 2100. The assessment determined that the Cox Creek DMCF will be largely unaffected by local sea level rise, as well as storm surge associated with what we identify as a worst-case scenario, Category 3 hurricane. This is as a result of the facility's current elevation, which is at plus 36 feet, and what this contract before you today for review and consideration and hopefully approval would raise the facility to plus 60 feet. We are also including armored stone on the exterior slope of the dike of the facility to an elevation of plus 10 feet. Just important to note, regular and ongoing inspections of the facility will continue to be conducted to ensure the integrity of that armoring and that that's maintained into the out years. So that is how that accommodation and taking into account sea level rise and climate change was built into the design of this facility and how the expansion is being designed.
If there are unanticipated changes, is it possible to, is it all built in or is it possible to make
Adjustments. Absolutely. We are looking to start construction on the elevation rise this summer, but it will be a multi-year process. And then ultimately, the intended elevation of this facility is to go to plus 80 feet.
So that's built in the potential.
Exactly. So there will be milestones and opportunities in the out years to continue to take into account what are we seeing in the data, what are we seeing in the trends, and do we need to make design adjustments.
Very good. Thank you. I congratulate you also. I see you have down here the federal grant program to Tucker's. You want to mention that?
Absolutely, yes. As noted in the news just recently, the port received $1.8 million, I believe, from EPA for the DERA program, and that's the Diesel Emission Reduction Act. This is at least the third year that the port has received this type of grant award, and we're really excited about what this means in terms of working with the equipment upgrades and infrastructure upgrades to reduce our emissions. But some of the feedback that we've received from EPA in receiving these awards is that it's due to our very strong outreach and community engagement. And so we're very proud of what this grant award represents for the port.
I congratulate you. I congratulate all of us. It's a very good thing. Let me just mention, we talked earlier, and your predecessor is not here, and if he were, I would guard him. I'm on praising him and thanking him. The progress on the tunnel.
Yes.
If it goes through, is absolutely amazing. Something that when I was Speaker Pro Tem, which was several decades ago, we were working on and couldn't get moved.
I would be remiss if I didn't thank the administration and MDOT for the support for the Howard Street Tunnel and advancing that absolutely enormously critical project. It is truly a game changer for the Port of Baltimore and the state of Maryland.
Well, I know we'll hear more about it later, but I'm just very excited.
I could talk about that all afternoon, but we've got a very long afternoon of a full agenda, but thank you so much for all the great work at
Absolutely.
The port.
Absolutely. As I would just mention, one last thing, as Jim White would say, the Howard Street Tunnel coupled with the second 50-foot berth deepening at Seagirt is off to the races for the Port of Baltimore.
Game changing.
Absolutely. Thank you for your continued support.
Thank you very much. Other questions on the remainder of the transportation agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
All those in favor? Okay. 3-0. Now, we're going to move on to the secretary's agenda, and before we get started on that, I want to everybody here welcome our new executive secretary of the Board of Public Works, John Gontram. Let's give him a round of applause. By the way, nice work on keeping everybody on track earlier this morning. It was very tough. But John took over from Sheila McDonald on January 1st. And, John, congratulations, first of all, in your new role. Welcome to the new role, although he's not a stranger to this board. You have some big shoes to fill in replacing Sheila. We're sorry to lose her, but she retired on December 31st, along with recording secretary Missy Hodges. And we want to recognize both of them for their incredible accomplishments and their many years of service. And we're going to try to recognize them at a future board meeting with some official recognition. But after 30 years of service for Sheila and 24 of them here at the Board of Public Works and Missy, 31 years of state service, they're going to be a tough act to follow, but Sheila will be. But I know that you're going to do a great job, John, so thank you. Before joining us, those of you who don't know, John served as the comptroller's BPW liaison for the past 4 years. Well, anybody can do that job is prepared for just about anything. He sharpened his expertise on procurement regulations and served on the Procurement Reform Commission with distinction. And we decided that we would welcome him to his first meeting with a very light agenda to get him started off. We're going to ease him into the job. So, welcome.
All right, thank you, Governor, for that welcome and for those kind words and for the confidence you and Treasurer Koff and Comptroller Francho have shown in me. I'll certainly endeavor to emulate the unfailing professionalism that Executive Secretary McDonald demonstrated really in exemplary fashion in this position. Truly honored to be here for the first time as Executive Secretary of the Board of Public Works at this, the first, as you mentioned, Governor, constitutionally required meeting of the 156th year of this board. We have 23 items on the Secretary's agenda, including one supplemental item, and there are 3 reports of emergency procurement pending.
Great. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that after he had been the timekeeper for 2 hours this morning, he wanted his old job back. But that's okay.
I wanted my old job back.
Yeah. But Ann Clace is moving over from Legislative Affairs to handle the John's former work at the BPW. And welcome. Thank you.
Very good. Are there any questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I'd just like to point out the 3 ladies.
I was going to say that, yes.
Just so you yes. No one noticed.
So my BPW liaison is also from the Comptroller's Office, so that's like he's taken over. It's a complete monopoly now. I don't know how he managed to do that. It seems like there should be some kind of a rule against that. But we have a great team, and he's obviously done a great job training all of these terrific people, and we're happy to have them. They do all the real work here. Any questions? No questions?
Item 7, please.
Item 7 is a neighborhood business work loan from the Department of Housing and Community Development. I said Michael Holofsky is here to answer any questions.
Yes, this, Governor, is something I support very strongly. It's a $3 million general obligation bond to Union Collective. I'm a big supporter of this facility. They took over the abandoned Sears warehouse property on I-83 right in downtown or close to downtown Baltimore, and they've turned it into a thriving marketplace of Baltimore-based small businesses, including Union Craft Brewing, Baltimore Whiskey, the Charmery. I had the opportunity to visit the collective when it was still under construction, and after its grand opening, this is a facility that sat abandoned for years and years and years, and Adam Bench and his team John Serevitz and Kevin Blodger and Seawall Development. These folks have created a little window into the future as to what's going to happen to some of these urban areas that are right now unfortunately shut down and closed up. They're going to be opened up and be turned into thriving businesses and gathering places for our citizens. So thank you very much for what you guys have done, and I urge everyone to go and visit if you haven't, and get a glimpse of the future. Thank you, Adam. Do you want to say anything?
No, thank you. This is exceptional. I'm super incredibly grateful to have your continued support on this project. It's meaningful to us in Baltimore and our state. We're excited to keep trucking along and making progress.
And you can invite all of us up there, because I understand now you can have a beer, obviously, which is delicious, but Johns Hopkins is going to try to open something up, right?
We're working on that and filling the remaining spaces, and I would absolutely welcome all of you to join us to raise a pint, explore the many manufacturers under one roof. As Comptroller mentioned, there's an ice cream factory, a coffee roaster, a whiskey distillery, a rock climbing gym. We try to get the order right first, but it is definitely a site for you to visit and explore many great things being created right here in Baltimore.
Excellent.
Well, with my New Year's resolutions, I think I might have to skip the beer, the distillery, and the ice cream, and just do the rock climb. But thank you very much for the great work that
you
did. Thank you.
Thanks.
Any other questions on the Secretary's
agenda? I just have one request. Now, the Department of Agriculture, number one, could you just relay a request? I would like to learn a little more about how the agricultural cost share program works. I mean, we're getting to significant sums to individuals, and I just think understanding the process would be worthwhile.
Is Norman Astle here from the Department of Agriculture?
It doesn't have to be done this moment.
Okay.
Also, make sure we get a response back to the Treasurer.
I think when you see such big numbers, it's
great. Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second.
3-0. Move on to the DNR real property agenda.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway-Riccio, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 9 items on our real property agenda today for which we are seeking approval, and those items include our recommendations for the FY 2020 annual grant awards for the Rural Legacy Program. With your approval of this item, we will be awarding 17 grants to rural legacy areas throughout the state that total over $18.8 million. These funds will be used by our local partners, many of whom are here with us today, to purchase conservation easements from farmers and landowners who wish to protect their property into perpetuity. We are also seeking approval and making a recommendation to expand 6 rural legacy areas, which will enable our local partners to do even more on the land conservation front. I want to thank Governor Hogan, who championed and signed the legislation in 2016 that increased the funding for land conservation programs such as Rural Legacy, and I want to thank all 3 of you for your ongoing support of this program. As you know, earlier in 2019, we celebrated the 20th year, and thanks to the leadership of the 3 of you, we celebrated a milestone of 100,000 acres protected through the Rural Legacy Program. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. As you know, and thank you for your leadership, but our administration is committed to land preservation and conservation, and I'm really pleased that these Rural Legacy grants are continuing. I think they make a huge difference in protecting our environment. And I know that we have a number of representatives here that are from the various Rural Legacy areas. And why don't we bring them all up? We've got the grant recipients for a photo with the board and with you.
Yes, sir.
Let's do that. Can we do that for a second? But that's coming fast because we got a pretty long agenda.
Thank
Rows. All short ones in front of me. Yeah. The treasurer and I.
All right.
All
right. All right. Tell me if I need to do any more.
Right here for me? Right here? All right. Great. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, we go that way too.
Yeah.
Are there any questions on the DNR agenda? Is there a motion?
Move approval.
Second? Very good. Now we're going to move on to the university system agenda.
Good afternoon. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 12 items on the agenda. Here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions on the university system?
I have, if I could, I'd like to call up items 2, 3, and 4 at the same time, since I have the same concerns about all three. Governor and Madam Treasurer, when item 3, which is a request from the university to approve the last bid package for the construction of the new Cole Fieldhouse came before the board, this board on November 20th. Meeting last year, I expressed concerns about the overall cost of this project. When the university came before the board in October 2015, the total estimated cost was $147.4 million. Today, assuming the bid package is approved, the total overall project estimate, inclusive of the design, construction, and equipment, comes out to $210 million. 147 originally 4 years ago. Now it's at 210 million. That's a difference of almost 63 million in the lifespan of this project. At the last meeting, I had a quote from Mr. Bill Allen. Does he still work with you?
I'm going to bring him up.
From the University of Maryland, who in 2015 said to this board, and I quote, "Myself and my staff have the responsibility to keep the project within that approved appropriation," end quote. Let me just say I'm supportive of the idea behind the project. You know, there's Hope Springs Eternal as far as Terps sports program, but what
and
I'm taking
is doing
what?
Basketball
team. Yeah, basketball team's doing great. Good.
Yeah, and the women's
basketball. Yeah. Well, the team's not so much, but what I take issue with is the fact that the total cost of this project continues to increase. Obviously, we can spend all day debating the merits of construction management at risk, which the university system seems to strongly prefer, versus design, bid, build, which I personally prefer and is the preferred construction method of DGS. But at the end of the day, it's the job of all of us to make sure that taxpayers' money is being spent wisely. One of the benefits, supposedly, with construction management at risk is that there's certainty with respect to the overall cost of the project. The Cole Fieldhouse project and the Residence Hall project at College Park and the Science Building project at the University of Maryland Eastern Shore all have guaranteed maximum prices. In the case of Cole Fieldhouse, in September 2017, we approved an increase in price due to the university's desire to make some alterations to the design of the project. The justification the university system is providing today for the increases in overall project costs for each of these items is the shortage of skilled labor in the construction industry. This is not a new phenomenon, obviously. It's been around for several years now. I would imagine that the construction companies, Gilbane and Holder, are acutely aware of the labor shortage being faced in their industry, and I would have hoped that they would have built this into their estimates. So now we're being asked to sign off on a $24 million increase for the Cole Fieldhouse project, a $40 million increase in the residence hall project at College Park, and a $12 million increase in the University of Maryland Eastern Shore Science Building project. So there is there's $76 million that we could perhaps contribute to the, I think they're looking for Kerwin money downstairs. But I guess my first question in the university system is why are taxpayers or public, I'm not sure whether these are, what kind of fees are being used here, but it's ultimately it's all public money. Why are the taxpayers eating these increases? Why aren't the contractors doing it?
I'll bring up Bill Olin, the executive director for construction procurement at for construction at College Park.
Good afternoon, Governor, Treasurer, Comptroller Franchot. What we're seeing not only in the university system, in other public projects, and through the private development, I think the Lieutenant Governor did a good job talking about what he had heard back in at the November meeting. It's widespread. It's in the region. It's least highlighted between Wilmington and Wilmington, Delaware, and Richmond. There are billions of more work going to be put in place, and the shortage is really labor. Skilled labor, folks are retiring from the fields and not being replaced. So you noted that. The Lieutenant Governor spoke of it at the November meeting. What we're seeing are the prices are going up, not because of, majority of it is not because of scope. The dorm project at College Park, it's been 900 beds from day one. The cost to put that work in place because of the lack of qualified tradespeople, this is not only here. We've seen this getting worse for the last couple of years with projects, trying to keep them in the box. We do value engineering. I think St. Mary's College, on an item that was on the Secretary's agenda, had a good write-up on what they did to try and cut the scope of the project, get it back into budget, but they weren't able to either. And right now it's trade costs. It is... We've increased our estimates on the projects to the point where how much can we defend an estimate on a square foot per dollar per square foot cost, which looks far greater than anything we've seen. And I think that trend is not over. We're looking at, we have done a lot of outreach both in Western Maryland and Eastern Shore with the Chamber of Commerce, holding meetings with subcontractors to try to get them interested in participating in bidding. It is purely a subcontractor issue.
I understand all of this. I appreciate it. All of it could be obviously foreseen, I think, by the whoever it is we're paying to handle the oversight of the project. They're experienced in this field. It's no kind of mystery that there has been a shortage of skilled labor. But I would recommend, I'm probably going to vote against these because I just find it to be too casual and too much of treating the taxpayers like an ATM machine to come back and get the money. I would prefer that you do what Salisbury did with the next project, which is a swimming pool athletic facility that they came in and asked for a significant amount of money for, and they went in and found out that the money wasn't going to be able to pay for the kind of renovation. So they changed the design, and in fact, they're returning money to the state. That's good. Why don't you take these projects back to your sponsors and tell them to trim whatever cosmetic and other bells and whistles are attached to these things, and then bring them back before us. That would be the financially prudent concept, and I'm sure that the managers who are in charge of this, who are getting paid to manage this, could make some reductions.
I will take that message back, sir. Myself and my staff give options all the time about cutting scope on projects. We would have to cut beds on the dorm project, for instance, and cut out research and academic space on the project at Salisbury. We've already cut out some the UMES project. We've cut out scope to try and keep it within budget already. The dorm project, we have looked at alternate construction materials to try and lower the cost. We have not been successful. So the only option on the dorm project is to cut beds.
I'm going to defer to my colleagues. They probably don't want to do this because these have been sitting around, but I would certainly like to see you go back and try again.
Okay. I will take that back. No problem, sir.
Do you want to defer for 2 weeks? Do we hear what you have to say or not?
I'm perfectly happy to vote on it right now. If you think 2 weeks will provide information, I think we've heard a number of times now about these projects, and they have been, I don't know the proper terminology, but value engineered, brought down. I don't think in terms of education and the future investment of our education infrastructure, they should be brought down more in size. And if this is what the market is demanding, and you have, this is mostly not generally funded, it's university and auxiliary funds. I'm prepared to support the university.
Look, I want to make sure if the comptroller's concerns can be addressed and we can answer some of his questions, and deferring the item for a few weeks so that the university can sit down with him and his staff and provide more information and try to address his concerns so we can bring it back in 2 weeks. If that's
that would be great.
That makes sense, then we should do that. If you think that that's going to, if we don't take a vote today, it's going to cause some undue harm and, you know, blow up the whole process because it's some emergency, time frame's running out, then we can take a vote right now and it might go up or down. You know?
2 weeks, I might vote for it.
We have had an issue since the item was deferred since November, an issue with the contractor, which is we had a subcontractor pull out, one of the major subcontractors, and the next sub is considerably more. I'm a little worried about deferring it again. I'm just stating that. Whatever the board wishes to do, I will follow that direction.
Okay. Is there a motion to...
I would defer for 2 weeks, if possible.
So the board is clear. The next board meeting is on the 29th of January, which is 3 weeks. So okay. You're aware.
And he's saying he's concerned that one of the 3 week delay may cause a problem with the bidder.
I'm concerned since we've already lost one sub and we've had a considerable increase in the housing project.
Who's in charge of the construction management and risk?
Who is the design builder on the housing project is Holder Construction.
Governor, I would move to approve the projects.
Okay, I'll second the treasurer's motion.
So, still get whatever information you get back.
I have all the value engineering information and where we already cut millions of dollars out of that. I can provide that to John, and he can share it with the staff.
So the treasurer's made a motion, and I've seconded it. It's going to pass 2-1, and you're still going to get back an answer to the comptroller's valid concerns.
Well, plus I would add to the comptroller's concerns. There are a lot of projects laying out there ready to go. How you are re-engineering your budgets to be able to do, now that you know that the market is tight and why it's tight, what you are doing, including working with other entities, training people, bringing them in. What are you going to do to allow us to continue to go forward in these economic times?
There was a conference call yesterday morning with about 12 folks from the system, including the vice chancellor and others from the system of university system, to talk about next steps and what are we going to do about increasing.
Terrific. So you're talking. Now the question is, what are you saying and what are you going
to
do?
I have some homework to do after yesterday's conference.
And let me just say, the explanation that you gave is a very valid one as well. And this is true in the public sector and the private sector.
Correct.
And while it's a problem for us with costs going up, it's not because things are bad, it's because things are good. So we had the greatest economic turnaround of any state in America. And it's hard, it's so many, the economy is booming, and there's so much project, we don't have enough skilled workers to accommodate all of that growth.
So the question is how we're dealing with that.
And so nobody anticipated that we would have such a great economy and that we would use up all of the construction workers and that the cost would rise so rapidly.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that, but it is the mindset that I feel I'm running into all the time, which is
it's going to cost more money, so we're going to pay it, rather than what can we do to, you know, keep it within budget.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes you have to make design changes, right, and you have to give something up. Everybody does that.
Yeah.
I agree, sir.
Great.
To your point, Governor, the construction construction unemployment rate is about 1% lower in this region than the regular unemployment. So we're at record lows. And to your point,
we're at virtual unemployment in the construction.
Right, for construction workers that can be employed. For to your question, Treasurer Cobb, I think it starts with what the Lieutenant Governor was talking about in November with K through 12. Just leave it at that.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
All right, now we'll move on to the Department of General Services.
Yes, sir.
We already made the motion and passed the motion on the system, so wait, pay attention. Stay with us here.
I'm losing. Let me have one of these jobbers. Thank you so much.
The motion was on items 2, 3, and 4, correct?
Yes. So, okay, yeah, I'm sorry. You pulled that out.
Three and four.
Is there a motion on the remainder of the agenda?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that was 2-1. We got it.
Motion on the balance of the
move
agenda.
Approval on the remaining.
3-0 on the remainder.
Thank you.
There you go. Thank you, Secretary Churchill.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Maryland Department of General Services. Our department has 83 items on our agenda today. Yes, including 4 supplemental items and 1 hand-carried item. We are withdrawing item 42 and item 75, and we have representation available to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Questions on DGS.
I'm going to defer to the Treasurer. Do you have questions?
I do, but give me a sec. Sorry. One of them was about item 40, IT. You have such a big agenda, it's hard sort of to
Yes, I'm sorry. Madam Treasurer, I didn't hear
40.
40? All right. Item 40 having to do with the Fujitsu desktop statewide replacement. Health services.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Gregory James, Deputy Secretary for Operations of the Maryland Department of Human Services. So this contract is for the purchase of 3,290 Fujitsu desktop computers at a cost of approximately $4 million. These are to replace outdated equipment and to allow us to make sure that our workforce is ready as we roll out the new MDThink applications, particularly in the family investment. So this is one of a series of replacements for hardware that we're pursuing.
So one of my questions is, how are we doing with MDThink?
I believe we're doing very well. So we have deployed in a pilot fashion in Washington County the child welfare system, and we're preparing to deploy in our next counties. And following the successful deployment there, then we'll roll out to the rest of the state by this summer, we anticipate. And then we anticipate rolling out for the family investment, our eligibility and enrollment system. The rollout of that will also start this summer. And then child support will follow on in December of this year.
Could you keep us informed? Is it
absolutely. Be very happy to bring
Thank
you all
you.
On that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Great.
So I thought, Madam Treasurer, you were going to comment on, I guess it's 41 or something, which is the Board of Elections.
Well, that's
true. Board of Elections.
Matthew Heckles here what the agency has to say yes. about the legislative letter.
Matthew Heckles? Hmm? Is Nikki here? Anyone from the Board of Elections?
I don't mean to do this.
You know, 42 is Board of Elections. You know, 42.
I believe it's, 40 is a task order item with multiple task orders. The DHS item, which is Reverend Fenn Treasurer, is on that item, as is the State Board of Elections.
Where's the Board of Elections item?
Here, pass that. Please.
That's it.
Yeah, no, I'm defer to you because the legislature sent some kind of memo saying that they questioned whether or not it had been authorized. Appropriate.
Mr. Charles.
Good afternoon. Nikki Charles, the Minister of State Board of Elections.
Yeah, can you tell us about this item and most specifically the questions raised by the Department of Legislative Reference in your responses?
Sure, I'd be happy to. With me is Shelley Holland, Director of Budget and Finance with the State Board of Elections. So this TORF does two basic things. It provides us resources for two basic projects. One is to provide database support and software development for the statewide voter registration and election management candidacy system. The second group of resources will help us start our project to replace the electronic poll books. We're looking at doing that for 2022, but we'd like to start working on getting some of the do-it documents in place so we can be ready to roll once the 2020 election is over. So the Department of Legislative Services sent a memo to the Treasurer Monday raising some questions about funding, and I'm happy to answer those. MD Voters, which is the statewide voter registration database, has historically been funded as special funds. It's county funding for the system, and that will continue under this.
And do the locals know about that?
They do. They have been paying to support MD Voters for well over 10 years now.
No, but the new funding that will be required.
Right. So all of the bids for this part of the contract came in higher than what we've been paying for the last 5 years. And so we will be releasing to them the difference between what they had budgeted and what the new contract will be, and we will work with them to get a deficiency appropriation if they need that to do that.
You will be working with them to get a deficiency appropriation from whom?
We'll be working with the local boards of elections to help them get the extra funds from their county governments.
From their counties.
So this is
an increased cost to the counties, unanticipated.
It is. The contract prices all came in higher than the existing contract. The existing contract was awarded back in 2014. Elections are somewhat of a different world now than they were in 2014 with all the additional security requirements. And so that's very much part of why this contract is higher in value than, well, this part of the contract is higher than what we've been paying for the last 5 years.
And this is something that you couldn't have anticipated that it would be higher? Are they that different this year than they were, 9 months ago when the last budget was written?
Well, we didn't have this contract award. We didn't know what the proposals were going to be. We did have a very competitive procurement. We had 10 proposals, all of which were higher than what we've been paying under the current contract. So we couldn't anticipate exactly what it was going to be until we had finished the procurement. I did communicate with the Maryland Association of Counties and explain this to them, and so they understand the funding situation that we have and, you know, are going to work with us on it.
What does that mean? NACO is going to come up with the money?
No, they understand the situation and that they're going to be working with the county governments to fund the difference. It is unfortunate that the contract came in higher than what we've been paying for 5 years. But all of the bids came in higher than what we've been paying.
How much?
We currently pay $2.5 million a year, and under the new contract, the portion is $4 million a year.
It's almost double.
Yeah.
And all the counties contribute the same
proportion? They do. We allocate it based on voting age population.
All right. Well, I look forward to following up with you on some of these questions and the other ones that I know have been raised about the security of your IT system with the new wireless communications, which I understand there's going to be potentially legislation.
That's what we've heard about the Election Day Network, too.
Yes.
Right, we were before you last month,
I believe, months, yeah.
on the router procurement to set up the Election Day Network so that the electronic poll books can communicate and enable us to implement same-day registration without impacting the timing of the canvasses.
Yeah, and to be candid, I think there is a need for more transparency about the decision-making and about the assurance of security. I know we have been told we can't say anything because it would make it not secure. That doesn't wash anymore.
Okay.
So we look forward to seeing a little more sunshine.
Sure. Be happy to do that.
Thank you.
I have another item. Item 81.
81 having to do with the MIA lease.
Yes.
Depending on the nature of the question, but we'll start with Wendy Scott Napier, Assistant Secretary for Office of Real Estate. We also have members from our Attorney General's office, if you have a legal
question. Good.
And members
love
of the
Attorney General. Yeah. I see Mr. Redmer back there also. That's good.
Yes.
So we're being asked to approve a new 10-year lease for office space for Maryland Insurance Administration. And I have a couple of concerns. One is that it's my understanding that back in August 2017, DGS issued an RFP seeking new office space for the MIA, which has been located at St. Paul Plaza since 2009. That was in August of 2017. In May of 2018, DGS informed Montgomery Park in the southwest part of Baltimore City that it was the recommended awardee for this contract award. And during the negotiations with Montgomery Park, the department exercised its authority to cancel the RFP, citing concerns by the Maryland Insurance Administration about a potential relocation to Montgomery Park. Mm-hmm. It appears to us that the department acted legally in this decision, but there is a pending appeal filed by Montgomery Park to the Maryland State Board of Contract Appeals. And I think given the highly unusual move by DGS, it would be prudent as a matter of fairness and due process for the Board of Public Works to wait until MSBCA renders its decision on the appeal. Furthermore, I'm concerned by the optics of the transaction. To be blunt, I think it makes the state look bad. After the department informs a bidder that they're being recommended for an award to pull out of the negotiations. And I understand MIA and Mr. Redmer obviously had some concerns, but I would think that these concerns would have been identified before the RFP went out and would have and should have been factored into the deliberation process that led to the recommended contract award. Furthermore, and this is most important, I'm told that the new 10-year lease doesn't have a termination for convenience clause, which appeared in the previous lease. This is quite rare and essentially handcuffs the state to this lease and to this location, regardless of whatever circumstances might arise in the future. And I have to say, while I understand the unique circumstances here and the delays that have occurred, I really don't appreciate reading about the strong-arm tactics being utilized by the current landlord, who I know personally and professionally. It's really not a good look when they tell the tenant, us, the state, hey, sign this new contract by this certain date or we're going to double the cost of the lease. Imagine doubling the cost of the lease in that area. God bless the Central Business District. I love Baltimore City. But doubling the rate in that area, given the vacancy numbers? So I think this board should only consider all the relevant facts and information regarding this contract and procurement, and I think we should wait for the decision from MSBCA. And I really resent the landlord seeking to put a lot of pressure on us by bringing this doubling the lease up. I don't know who dropped the ball. I have no dog in this hunt as far as whether they stay in the down the whatever it is center district business district or whether they move out slightly to Montgomery Park. That's not the issue. The issue for me is just basic fairness. And so I don't really know what happened here, but we're being asked to sign off on something that's going to cost the state of Maryland $16.8 million, 10-year lease, before we have had the chance to carefully review every aspect of the contract, according to the Board of Appeals. So, Governor, I would move that the board defer this item until MSBCA has issued its ruling. I understand it was heard last month or early last month.
It was October 23rd.
October 23rd. Well, fine. You can write them and ask them to speed up their process, but awarding this in the face of a protest, big protest, given the circumstances, I mean, was there a competitive bid after you pulled it back from Montgomery Park?
When we withdrew, when we canceled the RFP, Comar allows us to negotiate directly with the existing landlord. So we were permitted to enter into negotiations with Kornblatt. So there was not a competitive resolicitation. I just wanted to clarify one thing, if I could. When we canceled the RFP, we did that at Commissioner Redmer's request. However, 3 days after we canceled the RFP, we sat down with the Dollar Financial Regulation Group. They were actually part of that RFP, and they were included in that RFP based on legislation that was to be passed that would have transferred financial regulation from labor to MIA. And 3 days later, we met with that group to confirm, was legislation passed? Were they, in fact, required to be located? And we learned that day that they were not. And so that meant that 15,000 square feet would have been removed from the RFP. And that was a significant enough change. We would have had to cancel aside from Commissioner Redmer's letter. So I just wanted to share that. So it wasn't this cancellation, while it was initially based on Commissioner's letter, we learned within 3 days that there was another substantial change in the scope.
Well, why wouldn't you just have brought that to Montgomery Park's attention and asked them to make adjustments? They won the bid.
We're actually not permitted to do that because that's a significant change in the scope. So we would have had to cancel the RFP, and if MIA wanted us to go back out, we would have had to issue a new RFP.
Yeah. What is the 10-year – the Montgomery Park has free parking, right?
Yes.
And what are you planning on paying for parking over the next 10 years at this site?
The parking here at this site, we will be paying $160 times 94 spaces. So we will be paying about $1.8 million over the new 10-year term for parking.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a difference, and the taxpayers can benefit from, I take it. What about the square foot cost for Montgomery Park versus where they are?
You are correct. There is a difference between what we're paying it with Kornblatt at 200 St. Paul. That's based on the Central Business District location, and then, of course, Montgomery Park is on the outskirts of the city, and there is a difference.
But what are the costs?
There is the difference in the two rental rates. It's roughly $6.65.
So how much difference. Is that over a 10-year lease?
That's about $400,000 a year.
Okay, so that's $4 million plus $1.8 million that the taxpayers could benefit from. And most of all, Montgomery Park could be viewed as being treated fairly in this, since they haven't done anything wrong. They just happened to be awarded the contract or told they were going to get it, and then somebody didn't sign something. But the optics are that they were picked, and most importantly, the taxpayers can save $4 million plus $1.8 million. So why not stay where you are, 200, whatever it is, until you're able to move and sign a contract with Montgomery Park?
We were asked by the agency to cancel the...
Okay, why? What did the agency say?
Based on the commissioner's letter, and I can Commissioner Redmer can come up and talk to those points.
Probably should have Commissioner Redmer come up and talk about some of those points. But thank you.
Hey, good afternoon. I'll let you ask questions, but I do want to point out that there is zero taxpayer dollars involved. We were 100% funded by special funds through assessments to the folks that we regulate.
So it's the insurance agent businesses that pay.
Yes.
That would benefit. Apparently, in the background I got, one of the reasons you want to stay where you are is because they don't want to pay more money. How can that be?
So
they're going to be paying.
Sure. The way
5.8 million more
is what we heard was. My understanding is, and I wasn't involved in the negotiations. The new lease at the current location is less than the current lease, so there is a savings. What we could never get a handle on, and this is important to talk about the timeline. We awarded, DGS awarded the bid in 2018. A full year later, when I sent the letter requesting that the RFP be terminated, there was no contract. There was no finished lease. Not only was there no lease, I couldn't get a firm number on what our moving cost would be. So we didn't know what it would cost to move from our current location to Montgomery Park. I sent the letter in April 2019. In May, our lease expired. We had an automatic six-month rollover through November of 2019. My overriding concern through all of this was we could not be homeless. We could not physically plan and move 250 people in a six-month process. Just couldn't do it. The financial piece that I heard from the carriers is this, we have a budget, and the budget is for the daily operations of the organization. The move from point A to point B is not part of our budget, so we would have had to do a special assessment. We would have had to send letters to the insurance company telling them, you have to send us new money so that we can pay for this move. Now, if there would have been a cost savings, the cost savings on the rent would have been 5 years, 6 years, whatever the number is down the road. Most businesses, insurance businesses, especially those that are public, they're not interested in paying a lump sum to us today with the hope or expectation that they're going to save on the cash flow 4 years, 5 years, 6 years down the road. They're interested in the next quarter, not how much they're going to save on the back end. That was the feedback that we got from some of the carriers that that we regulate.
Okay. But for your customers, insurance companies, moving to Montgomery Park with some kind of, I don't know what the problem is as far as finding out the moving cost, but why don't we just do that?
Why don't we do what?
Why don't we do what we originally agreed we were going to do, which is...
So I can tell you that when the determination was made we were moving to Montgomery Park, we were moving to Montgomery Park. We began the planning process and meeting with consultants and all the things that you have to do to prepare a move. We were willingly going to Montgomery Park. But as the clock began to tick, as the calendar began to turn, in the beginning of 2019, I was growing more apprehensive about the conflict of not having a lease and not having a new place, not having a new lease for where we could go. Additionally, the new information that came up was from the employees of the Maryland Insurance Administration. We were going to lose a significant part of our workforce. These are, and I know everybody here believes that their team is special, but we have a high percentage of folks that are lawyers and CPAs and financial examiners, et cetera. And we were told under no uncertain terms if we move, they're moving. They're not going to come with us. And part of that is my fault. I'm a business guy. I know that when you move, you're going to lose employees. I know that. Every organization is going to lose employees when they move, but I underestimated the significant number of folks that we were going to lose. And then lastly, I'll say that one of the biggest issues for our employees was the loss of public transportation. Before we even moved, before the RFP process, we did surveys for our employees, and a significant percentage of our employees rely on mass transit, on public transportation. And the end result is that the Montgomery Park location would not serve our employees to the extent as the current location, as it means to getting back and forth to work. Okay.
So that you dropped the ball there, but I'm still confused as to who are you saying that Montgomery Park didn't communicate with you
I was not part of the negotiation, so they weren't supposed to communicate to me. They were dealing with DGS, and obviously we were communicating with DGS, and we did have a couple of meetings with the Montgomery Park folks. That's true.
Well, and what's the problem with letting the Board of Contract Appeals make the decision on this?
So I'm not a real estate guy. I'm trying to run an organization, and I can tell you that even though the employees have been told, you know, it looks like we're going to stay, there's still concern and apprehension. So as a leader of an organization, my objective is to try to provide some comfort and stability to the employees so that they know that we've got a home for the next 10 years.
Okay. And just finally, you actually believe the current landlord is going to double the rent?
Again, that's above my pay grade. My understanding is, and again, I'm not a real estate guy, but my understanding is this is not something that they made up. But it's part, and DGS would have to confirm this, but my understanding is it's part of the existing lease and not something new that was made up. But again, that's above my pay.
Okay. Well, my point is I just think that out of basic fairness, also on the merits, because who knows what the actual arguments are before the Board of Contract Appeals, but on the merits, on the optics, on the concept of treating a business fairly, this kind of fails on all points. And
I hope that
my colleagues would support me and, you know, put this off until we at least hear from the Board of Appeals. If they are dragging their feet for some reason, I'm happy to revisit it in a couple of weeks or a month or so. But right now, I just don't think it feels right. You know, we want Maryland to be a state where if you get an award, unless there's something you're doing that's bad, it's followed through on. And instead, I've gotten texts from all sorts of important people in Baltimore saying this state agency has to stay in the Central Business District. Is that the reason why
I can tell you, as I previously mentioned, we were prepared to move. We had the operational piece in gear to move. Again, meeting with consultants and so on. But a full year goes by. There's no lease. I don't know what it's going to cost.
But is that our fault, or is that fall being dropped by the state, or is that being dropped by Montgomery Park?
I was not part of the negotiations.
Well, who
is there anyone here?
Let me.
We've got a couple of people. Yes, we have a couple of people here signed up to speak on behalf of Montgomery Park. We have Michael Johansson from Rifkin, who's
governor
here, and Howard Goldberg from Montgomery Park.
Right. Yes, I'll defer to members of the board. I'm going to start with the claimed urgency in having this matter come to the board today prior to a decision by the MSBCA, which is the entity with whom the state has reposed the decision-making process on the protests which we have filed. And they've come to you to approve a sole source procurement for an incumbent landlord in the light of a competitive solicitation in which there was an award to my client, a situation where the state is going to pay some $8.6 million in excess of what it has to pay, seven times the amount of the claimed savings, and I'm always in favor of state savings, but going to Montgomery Park would multiply that by seven, in which there's a $15.8 million savings in the event that the extension is later approved. Now, the original reason for bringing this matter on a rush basis to this board is in light of the pending appeals, and I'll quote, the agency said, under the terms of the existing lease, MIA is required to pay double rent after the expiration of the holdover period. While Kornblatt has not invoked this provision to date, it will charge MIA double rent if a new lease is not fully executed and approved by January 8th. That's what the representation was to this board. The original version of that representation that was filed with the board had the following words after the phrase upon under the terms of the existing lease. And the original statement said, site lease provision. That reference has been subsequently removed, the site lease provision. And I may suggest to the board that my colleagues and my client have searched the existing lease provisions of the lease, and there is no provision by which the landlord can double the rent. In fact, there is a lease provision in Section 9.2 of the existing lease which says that the continued occupancy of the tenant shall not render the lessee liable for double rent. Now, we have asked on at least two occasions over the last 2 days counsel for the agency to explain to us where this lease provision is that requires double rent. We have gotten no response. I would suggest you may wish to ask DGS, where in the lease is this provision? I suggest that it doesn't exist. The second thing the original version of this matter to the board raised related to a letter from Kornblatt, which was supposedly attached here too. We have just received, within the last day, a copy of that letter. The letter basically says on a unilateral basis that it is the landlord's intention to charge double rent. There's no lease provision referenced in the letter. In fact, it's not even having been agreed to by DGS, who doesn't have the legal authority to agree to it because it involves the expenditure of state funds. This board has not approved a double rent provision. And so the concept that the state is obligated to pay double rent, we find, is not in the existing lease, and we find that references to a letter, which is a unilateral statement by a landlord, that he needs to have this pushed through this board immediately, even though there are pending appeals to the Board of Public Works. I suggest to the panel, or the board, that there are two matters before the board, and frankly, I don't think this board wants to get involved with the decision-making process that the Board of Public, that the MSBCA is going through. Because, and I appreciate Secretary Redner making the statements he did, but these were all dealt with at the hearing before the Board of Contract Appeals. The question that the board will have to answer was the decision to cancel the award to Montgomery Park supported by a rational basis and wasn't arbitrary and capricious? And the same issues were raised by the agency before the board. We made a presentation before the board. The board has held it sub curia, has not made a decision. But that's where people like Montgomery Park are supposed to go for a decision, not to make the Board of Public Works the decision maker, but make the MSPCA the decision maker. The second appeal related to the acknowledged failure on the part of the agency in renewing the St. Paul lease to have a written explanation for why it is in the state's best interest. We suggest it's not in the state's best interest, and they acknowledge there is no written representation or document which complies with Comar. Again, cross motions for summary judgment were filed before the board. The board held the matter sub curia. We are awaiting a response from the board. The next meeting of this board is January 29th of 2020. The lease date of the proposed lease is not even until February 1st. So you would have 3 additional weeks to allow the board to do its job, make its decision, and if, depending on the decision made by the board, then this board can consider the matter in the normal course without it being rushed through. I might also point out that essentially this push to judgment today involves a lease which has no termination for convenience provision, a provision which locks the state into this lease for the entire term, which is contrary to the normal provisions that are in state leases. Well, we took a look at the other state leases that have been, we're arguing to be discussed or have been discussed. Everyone but this one has a termination for convenience provision. It is a normal provision which protects the state from things which may occur down the road. And this lease does not have one. Finally, the other explanation relates to the landlords trying to get a loan. And the only public record we found indicates that there is no urgency in the sense that the loan on the property is now existing for at least another year before it has to be refinanced. We don't understand that, but that's the landlord's heading. That's not the state's heading. That doesn't say it's in the best interest of the state. So what we essentially have is we had a competitive solicitation. The insurance commissioner and DGS together made the decision as to the award of the competitive solicitation. It was to Montgomery Park. Montgomery Park's price is still substantially less than the pending proposal, and we believe that it is unfair to Montgomery Park to pull that again, and we've raised those subjects before the Maryland State Board of Contract Appeals, who ought to opine on it. As far as some of the issues that have been raised before, in April, this award was pulled. It is now January. The move could have occurred between April and January. The move can occur, frankly, within 10 days of today, if Montgomery Park were the entity which would get this lease, because there is space that we could put the state in. That's not part of the solicitation because it wasn't raised at the time. There was no issue at that time. Montgomery Park was ready to sign a lease months before the April date. It was deferred because the state wanted to hold back, or the agency wanted to hold back till the legislature was out of session. So that's what held up the lease to Montgomery Park. Montgomery Park thought this lease was a done deal. It had been negotiated. It had not obviously been presented to this board. But the surprise that they had in one day calling up and saying that you are terminated, and the next day a letter, or within a very short time, a letter of intent with the existing lessor occurs, we just think is inappropriate in view of the state procurement law. We have done what we were supposed to do. We raised these issues before the Maryland State Board of Contract Appeals. That is the entity that hears these types of issues. If you all want, we can give you several-hour presentation of our side of the story. I don't think you want to hear it, but we're happy to do it if you do. But that's who is hearing, who heard the evidence, who heard the witnesses, who can evaluate the evidence and can render a decision. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't know if you want to respond to that. There have been a lot of... So we have a little issue today in that unfortunately, we had a tragic situation after the earlier part of our hearing where I believe the assistant attorney general who represents DGS had a medical emergency and was...
He was carried out.
Was taken away in an ambulance. So he's not able to answer your questions today, but maybe someone else can address because we're hearing completely different information. We've been told by DGS that there is a provision that says the rent will be doubled, and we're hearing from you that there won't be. We're hearing from Mr. Redmer that he had nothing to do with this and that it was taking you a year to get the lease done, and you were saying you're ready to go. So I'd love to hear from the other side what their version of the facts is, but thank you very much for your side.
So there were three issues that have been brought up. One is the standing with the Court of Contract Appeals. We do have Patrick Sheridan with the AG's office. You had asked the question, have we contacted them? They can speak to that. And then we'll address the other two items.
And the gentleman who had an issue, is he okay?
He's okay. We're waiting on word back. He was responsive when he left the building.
Good afternoon. Patrick Sheridan, Assistant Attorney General. I litigated the case in front of the Board of Contract Appeals.
Okay. So can you give your version of events. We're trying to make a decision what we do here, and we heard one side, and
so,
imagine you have a different version of it.
I can speak
without relitigating the whole case that they did before the Board of Contract Appeals.
Right. Just to discuss the timing a little bit, we did have a hearing October 23rd, merits hearing in front of the Board. It was a one-day hearing. We had had numerous hearings before that, so the Board, I think, was familiar with the facts of this case. After the hearing, throughout the entire process, we let the Board know that time was of the essence, because we were in that holdover period. So, and at the conclusion of the hearing, we ordered expedited transcripts, we agreed to an accelerated briefing schedule, so everybody understood we didn't want to kind of circumvent that process at all. That was never the intent. The intent was to have this heard before the Board and not ask for an award in the face of the protest. So just from the timing issue.
And what was the timing of that last hearing?
October 23rd.
So maybe they didn't understand the meaning of time is of the essence.
And then we had a hearing in mid-December on the second appeal, and I asked the Board as gently as I could, when we could expect a decision, and they declined to give any sort of time frame for a decision on the appeal.
Okay, so I can understand that, but what about this new lease that we're being asked to approve? It doesn't have a termination for convenience?
That is not in... That's
not in his purview.
Right, I litigated that.
I mean, really?
Our Assistant Secretary, Wendy Scott Napier, can answer the question about the termination.
You are correct. There are none of the leases on our normal leasing agenda today. You're right. We have not waived T4C in the leases you've seen today, but it is not entirely uncommon. When we go into a new facility and there is a lot of fit-up, we have a termination for convenience. If a landlord has given significant contributions to us in some form, we do consider waiving the termination for convenience, or if there is a problem with a landlord's lender, if they cannot get financing, we do modify our termination for convenience. I will add that the lease draft we had worked on with Montgomery Park had a modified termination for convenience such that we could not have left the facility for 7 years. So they had a modified termination for convenience. The Kornblatt lease did waive the termination for convenience for several reasons. One of the considerations was an accommodation they were giving employees in the form of reduced parking. They reduced the parking from $170 to $50 for the employees. And that, over the course of a 10-year term, amounted to $3.6 million. So in that consideration, in consideration of some issues they were having with their lender and financing that they can speak to, we did waive the termination for convenience.
Okay, but that's their problem, number one. Number two, I hope you never get rid of the protection for the taxpayers in these termination for convenience. I guess in a highly unusual circumstance you can, but this adds to the bad feel of this project because, you know, it just strikes me as something that doesn't seem quite right. I'd much rather wait for the Board of Appeals to render a decision.
I want to try to just separate out the lease negotiations that you're dealing with from this discussion with the appeal of the bid process. So why don't we go back to you at the AG's office and the discussion about, we heard earlier the comment that, look, there's no question that this thing has been sort of it's completely screwed up. And we could sit here and argue for days about who's to blame and how we could do things better. There's no question it wasn't handled very well. But legally, and I'm not a lawyer, and you guys have been arguing this case, and we heard what the representatives of Montgomery Park believe their legal case is. I want to hear your side of it. I mean, we heard, do you believe the state had a right to cancel the procurement and start over? Because I'm assuming we didn't have any lease. I don't know why it took a year, but we didn't have a lease yet. Is that your...
Yeah, so we have a disagreement over what the standard is for the Board of Contract Appeals. The case law says, I think, very clearly that the standard is, was the decision to cancel the lease so arbitrary and capricious as to be fraudulent or to be a breach of trust? And we had a one-day merits hearing on that issue, and there was no evidence at all suggesting that this was some
fraudulent.
Yeah,
I don't believe anybody thinks it was fraudulent. Confident, maybe, but...
Right. I think whenever there's a cancellation of an RFP, something went wrong at some point. So nobody wants to be in this position.
Right.
But there was nothing nefarious or fraudulent or anything that breached the public trust here. It was done based on concerns that the agency had and concerns that the insurance industry had, and DGS reviewed those concerns and determined that they were legitimate and determined that it was in the best interest of the state to cancel the procurement.
And if both of you went through this extensive process with the Board of Contract Appeals back in October and both agreed that time is of the essence, because I would assume Montgomery Park wants to get it resolved just as badly as the other folks, both sides do, as does the state, they just haven't given you any response at all? Because we ought to drag the Board of Contract Appeals in here and ask them, why don't they get us an answer?
All I can tell you is that I did ask. I asked in mid-December, and I they didn't give me any time frame. And I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus.
No, that's okay. They've already been thrown under. they'll probably watch this.
Didn't you have a hearing in the end of December before the board?
Yeah, there's a on the second appeal on cross motions for summary decision. So there were three protests. The second protest looks a lot like the third protest, but the second protest wasn't appealed.
Here's the problem. You know, you're misplaced in this role because you're the lawyer and you're saying, well, is it legal? Is it not? Is it fair? No, it isn't. I mean, it's obvious that it isn't. Who knows what produced an unfair situation, a mess, who dropped the ball, who did what to whom. But the only way to clean it up is to at least wait for the Board of Appeals to make a decision. And I really feel pretty strongly about this, and I want to thank Montgomery Park for continuing. Most people would have dropped out of this because of the cost and et cetera, but obviously they feel strongly that they've been treated unfairly, and it certainly seems to be the case. It's highly irregular is stamped all over this thing.
So can somebody from DGS address the question of, does the existing lease have a provision for once you go past the extension period, the doubling of the rent, or not?
It's actually because we are out of lease that they can double the rent.
But is that in writing somewhere? Or they just arbitrarily just told you, since we're out of the lease, we're going to double the rent?
The lease says they cannot double the rent during the holdover period. We've exhausted our formal holdover. We're in what we call extended holdover, but we're basically on a month-to-month lease right now. We've exhausted our lease and the
So there's nothing holdover. Written anywhere that says the rent will double. It's just a threat.
I'd like to invite the landlord.
Yeah, let's hear from the representatives of the current landlord.
Okay. Tim Polanowski, Vice President and CEO, Kornblatt.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Carpal Collins. I'm representing the Kornblatt Company, which manages and operates the building for the lessor, which is St. Paul Plaza. I have with me today Tim Polanowski, the President and CEO of Kornblatt. Let me start with this. We would have strongly preferred not to seek this approval from the Board of Public Works while the three protest appeals remain pending before the Board of Contract Appeals. We would also have preferred not to impose double rent on the state, which we could have done as early as November of 2019 under the lease, but nevertheless, we would have preferred not to do that. We are here today asking for your approval because we find ourselves in an untenable position. The comptroller talked about fairness, and our view is it's not fair to us either. The delay in the Board of Contract Appeals decision has created a difficult situation for us. We are compelled by our refinancing of the building, which we must do in order to maintain financial control of the building. That refinancing is materially and adversely affected by any further delay. Let me explain why. Specifically, we are now at the final deadline that we have been given by our current lender. The deadline has been given to us in writing, and DGS has received a copy of that. It was 90 days from October 10th. If we pass today's deadline, January 8th, we don't know yet exactly what will happen, but we know it will be consequential to us. How did we get here? There's been discussion about the delays, the various periods, the holdovers, the additional holdovers, and now an extended holdover. The current lease is holdover, was extended again to allow for extension up through these first 8 days of January 8th, to January 8th, and that exhausts the 90 days. January 8th is literally the 90th day. Our situation is this. For more than 2 years, we've been unable to obtain an approved lease with MIA. For more than a year, in anticipation of that lease, we've been unable to bring in another tenant, line up any other tenant to fill 68,000 square feet. And most importantly, if we do not have a long-term lease in place by the 90th day, January 8th, and with all other time extensions and allowances now having been exhausted, we are in violation of the covenants of our loan that we must refinance in order to maintain financial control of the building. With regard to the legal process, let me just suggest this. The parties have participated fully in this evidentiary process before the Board of Contract Appeals. There's been discovery. There's been evidentiary hearings on the merits before the board to consider the appeals, and the proceedings go all the way back to May of 2019. The reality, for whatever reason, is that we have no ruling from the Board of Contract Appeals, but all good faith has existed during the entirety of the Board of Contract Appeals proceedings. Comar makes an exception that this board may proceed in the face of an appeal if there is a substantial state interest. And those state interests explained by the Department of General Services in its comments to you, together with our financial circumstances, allows for the board to make an exception and act. Now, a couple of things have been stated here today that I wanted to just set the record straight by counsel and representatives from Montgomery Park. contrary to what was asserted here today by them, there is a termination for convenience clause in the new lease that is before you today. Ms. Napier-Scott explained it precisely correctly. They had asked us to produce a different form of that clause. We agreed it's in the lease. We're happy to provide that to the board. We'll pinpoint that for you. Contrary to the assertions here today, the $4 million of alleged savings in rent, they are illusory. In fact, the new lease before you today would impose a lower overall rent than the rent at Montgomery Park. What Montgomery Park has failed to tell you and this board is that the MIA, if it were to move to Montgomery Park, will require 50% more space than at St. Paul Plaza. The rent at Montgomery Park will be $500,000 greater over the 10 years if they are to move. Counsel for Montgomery Park contends the double rent provision is not in the lease. He missed it. It's in the new lease, and we are happy to identify the language for the board. Lastly, the costs of the relocation and the cost of relocating the information technology platform. Montgomery Park failed to mention that to this board at all. And I've asked, let me ask, if I may, Mr. Polonowski, to just address those costs, which are also material and I think relevant to your decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kyle.
For the record, my name is Tim Polonowski. I'm the president and CEO of the Kornblatt Company. Good afternoon, Madam Treasurer, Governor, and Comptroller. So part of the argument is the cost to relocate. And based on our experience and numbers that I gave to each of your teams, that it would be much more expensive to move them than they anticipated in the very beginning. They would have to get new workstations, 244 new workstations, $2,000 a piece, 93 new offices for $1,000 a piece. The IT room, they have a very complex IT room. It's about $1.6 million to move that. It's not just pick up, put in a U-Haul truck, and go down the street. It's a lot more complicated. Everything has to be tagged, has to be detailed, and then they have to move it over in a certain way. That's based on the numbers of when they moved it over to our building in 2009. So the total relocation costs are about $2.3 million. And like I said, I was very open with those numbers in the beginning. I was hoping that you that your teams could vet them. So I wouldn't just be throwing numbers out that's not vetted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions of any of these gentlemen?
I feel pretty strong. I would really like to hold off for a couple of weeks, at least 3 weeks, and see if the board is...
Oh, yeah, please, go.
Your agenda item says there's no termination for convenience clause. That's what your agenda item says. Your agenda item says double rent is required under the existing lease. Both things that they just said are different than your agenda item. That's what they're asking you to vote on. The substantial state interest is now being referred to as the landlord's financial problem. If it's not the double state lease, then there's no cost to the state. If this is decided 3 weeks from now, even if they're right that they can try and collect $140,000 from you, you send your lawyers to fight it. There is no substantial state interest in, at most, a risk of $140,000.
Please.
So what the board item says is under the terms of the existing lease, MIA is required to pay double rent after the expiration of the holdover period. It is not written in the lease, but it's because we're out of the holdover period.
But that's a mistake.
They're permitted to do that.
Well, it's just a lease. Refrain from speaking.
We do believe it is not just for MIA's benefit, but because our Attorney General is housed in this building. We are concerned, I am concerned, about our landlord losing potential financial control of the building with two large state agencies still in the building.
So, can you speak up and say that again?
our Attorney General is in the office in this building in addition to MIA, and we are concerned about our two large agencies being in a building where the landlords lost financial control. We would be concerned that services could be reduced, that our state employees would not be in a safe building constructive to their agency's missions.
Okay. Any other questions?
I would move that we defer this till the 29th or whatever.
Could we hear specifically again from the representative of the present corporation as opposed to the other corporation? The present
corporation,
landlord. Well, Kornblatt versus Himmelrich. Of the impact of a 3-week, although we don't know if the Board of Contract Appeals is ever going to act, but the impact of a 3-week delay, since apparently you're not required to double the rent.
Yes, thank you, Madam Treasurer. If we pass today's deadline, we indeed do not know exactly what our financial institution will do. We expect, though, since we've had it in writing and we've had it for 90 days, and this is the 90th day, in all candor, we expect it may be consequential to us. It may be on the rates, it may be on the terms, it may be on the conditions, it may be on the availability of refinancing. We simply don't know, and it would be pure speculation on my part to suggest a particular scenario. This is not the first extension that the bank has granted. The bank has granted a number of them, starting back in May when the lease first expired, then at the end of the 6-month holdover period in November and so forth. So we are on our third extension from the bank. This was the one they put in writing. This is the one that said 90 days. And by our count, that letter is dated, by the way, October 10th. So by our count, today is the 90th day. It is the bank itself that is requiring us to impose the double rent. We would not intentionally, and that's never been, I think the Department of General Services, with whom we have dealt for 10 years on this lease previously, they know us better than to think that we would knowingly and intentionally do something like that. This is being compelled by our financial institution.
Thank you. Look, I think that this is probably the worst way to handle a procurement and a lease negotiation that I've ever seen since I've been governor. I think people screwed up all over this entire process. I don't think anybody was treated fairly, quite frankly, and I don't think anybody did their job as best they could have been done. The folks that were hoping to get the bid and that we never did get to a lease, I think I don't think you've been treated the way you should have been. I do think it puts the state at great risk to be homeless or to be in a situation where we can't afford to make the move to start all over again with this process, and to put a company like Kornblatt who has been a good landlord to us, an important company in the state, in financial risk of potentially losing control of the building and us being subject to potential litigation because we might be the cause of that. I mean, obviously we could all disagree about it. I'm not condoning, I'm not saying this was the greatest thing that ever happened, but I'm going to make a motion to pull this one item out of the 83 other items, and I would move that we approve the item.
I just would find that to be very disappointing. This is really an unfair situation that we, the state, have created. Very sensitive to Kornblatt's situation, but that's their problem. Our problem is the reputation of the state of Maryland, and this is just does not pass any test of fairness that you could possibly create. And I don't see the difficulty in waiting 3 weeks.
These are my glasses.
Oh, these are my head. That's so funny. If you were sitting here, I stole your glasses in my head.
But seriously,
I was doing that so he couldn't read his notes.
I would hope that we could wait 3 weeks. And I'm sure that the financial institutions and other folks that have long relationships with the companies, and they obviously, maybe the financial institutions have relationships with the state of Maryland, they're not going to create a situation which is chaotic. So what's the problem with waiting 3 weeks?
Governor, I find myself in a strange position. It's not that I'm pitying the downtrodden landlord. I've never done that. But
there's two downtrodden landlords here.
I do think that this was a terribly handled project by everybody, by DGS, by the Board of Contract Appeals. This has been going on for a year. Nothing is new. Apparently, you would have had to redo the bid anyhow when you found out that dollar wasn't going to be part of this. It's been discussed before the board since April, and I don't think that there's any reason to think that it's going to change or the board's going to act in 3 weeks. They ought to have acted earlier. I think that the people who pay the freight, not the taxpayers, but the people who are paying, have indicated they would like to continue to pay to be in downtown Baltimore where they are. The employees have indicated they want to stay in downtown Baltimore. Clearly, there wasn't good working relationship between MIA, the user agency, and DGS, or we wouldn't have to be here right now. But considering all those things, I think it is in the interest of the state at this time, as we have done in the past, to approve the contract in the light of, despite it being pending for God knows how long, before the Board of Contracts.
Okay, let me ask my colleagues, would you accept an amendment that would get rid of this no termination for convenience part? Why shouldn't the state be protected given the situation?
The lawyer for Secretary, we do have
our... We've not lost our other termination provisions.
Excuse me?
We have other termination provisions in the lease.
Can you terminate after 7 years with this one?
With this one, we can terminate if the landlord is in default of the lease. We've not lost that provision. What we cannot do is terminate at our convenience. But we've heard when we have an agency telling us we know we want to stay for 10 years and we do not foresee wanting to leave before the term is up, and we have a landlord who's giving us contribution towards employee parking to the tune of $3.6 million. Those are the reasons.
And you can't exercise the termination
for
with the other for convenience with the other building for 7 years.
You're correct. Yes.
So there's a motion on the floor.
I second.
And a second. It's 2-0. I assume.
2-1.
I forgot about you. So.
No, I'm so sorry, just for clarity's sake. The motion that was seconded, was that the comptroller's amendment to...
No, it was the governor's motion.
That failed for
the second. The comptroller's motion was not...
was not seconded. Right.
My motion was seconded.
The motion that was seconded was the governor's motion to approve the item with the comptroller voting against. Thank you.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you all very much. Now we move on to the other 82 items on the DGS.
And I'll just conclude by saying this has been a case study.
On what not to do.
What not to do. And we and the department has certainly learned from it and are applying the lessons so that it's not repeated. So.
Yeah, thank you. Are there other questions on the DGS agenda?
No, move approval.
Second. There's a second. Thank you very much. That concludes the Board of Public Works. Let me just say it was a very long and great agenda. Thank you for the great today we did had a really big I got one motion that I got done with the treasurer and one with the comptroller.
We'll get quiet while the meeting backs up, please.
They're surrounded on both sides.
And Happy New Year.
Congratulations.